The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Nothing perfect or considerable, we're so damn good. It's the story of your life. You're moving down the page, and you know you're on your way. The story of your life.
Morning glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Prayers for Tiger Woods, who is awake and responsive after a long surgery on his right leg and ankle. Dr. Anesh Mahajan, the chief medical officer at Harbor UCLA Medical Center, said in a statement, quote, comminuted open fractures affecting both the upper and lower portions of the tibia and fibia bones were stabilized by inserting a rod into the tibia. Combination of screws and pins used to stabilize additional injuries in the ankle and foot. Trauma to the muscle and soft tissue of the leg required surgical release of the covering of the muscles to relieve pressure due to swelling. I have no idea what that means. I do know that he's out of surgery in serious but stable condition. He will recover. This is L.A. County Sheriff Ellen Nueva at a presser yesterday. Cut number one.
No, they did not. Now, there's a bluff. They're sitting about 20 feet above the place where the vehicle came to rest.
Can you talk a little bit about if there was sand after he was taken out? Was he able to take a couple of steps? Can you talk a little bit about what that looked like?
He was not able to get up, no.
That
was not an option.
Did Tiger Woods ask you to contact anyone for him? Did he ask you to contact a specific member of his family or a specific member of his team that was here for the golf tournament at this point?
At a later time at the hospital.
At the hospital he did, but not at the scene.
I'm sorry, sir. Can you clarify?
He did at the hospital, but not at the scene.
He asked you to contact
Yes.
a member of his family.
Who was it?
A member of his team.
Oh, a member of his team.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the conditions inside the car?
Huh?
Can you talk about the conditions inside the car? Was the crack able to move at all?
Well, the interior of the cabinet of the vehicle was more or less intact. The front end was totally destroyed. The bumpers, everything was destroyed. Airbags deployed, all of that. And, however, thankfully, the interior was more or less intact, which kind of gave him the cushion to survive otherwise would have been a fatal crash.
Yeah, I'm very glad for Tiger Woods. I want to find out what kind of car that is. I don't know if I'm ever going to buy a new car now that I have a $275 new key, as I discussed yesterday, for my birthday present, since my wife put my key in her purse, but that's a digression. I'm glad he's fine. No, he's not going to walk away with double compound fractures of the fibia and tibia. Having experienced a double compound fracture of the two bones of my right arm in ninth grade, of course, the football coach, Tony Molinari, if you're out there, God bless you, walked in from the field and I was lying on the gym floor and said, let's just cut it off here. I was in shock. I can't remember. You don't do much with a double compound fracture of the fibia and the tibia, as far as I can read that. You don't walk away. But he's not dead. I saw people last night. I thought, oh, my God, Tiger Woods. I was online, and it took a while to figure out, no, he's just in a bad crash. But that is the update, out of surgery, stable condition. Now let me give you some good news. Faster past the freedom if COVID jabs exceed expectations. In Great Britain, restrictions could be lifted sooner than June 21st, if the data at large show an improvement, according to a government source. And what are they talking about? 95%, this is from the Times of Israel, 95% of former COVID patients, 95%, 95 out of 100 of those who get sick, suffer no irreversible damage, according to an Israeli study. Now let's go to the hearings yesterday on Capitol Hill. I love these headlines. Former Capitol security officials blame intelligence lapses for deadly January 6th riot. Then the second one, that was from the Post, second Post story. FBI alert about possible war against Congress reached D.C. and the Capitol Police on the eve of the attack, deepening security questions. Around 7 p.m. on January the 5th, less than 24 hours before an angry mob overran the U.S. Capitol, an angry mob ran over the U.S. Capitol. That's what happened. People are minimizing this on right-wing media, and that is wrong. An angry mob ran over and threatened and injured, and although we don't know why that policeman died, a policeman died, and I think it's felony murder because of the events leading up to it. The night before, they got a warning, and everyone was playing Not Me yesterday. The monkey see, monkey hear, monkey do, all of them not do. From the New York Times, ex-Capitol security officials blame other agencies and communications failures after riot. So they're all yelling at each other, all right? So let's go to cut number 11. This is Stephen Sund, who is at the Senate hearing with Alex Padilla, the brand-new freshman newbie senator, making an admission against interest number 11.
Earlier, weapons were recovered during both those events.
Okay. And so, to the best of your recollection, in the lead-up to January 6th, since it was comparable assessment, comparable intelligence, roughly, you therefore proceeded with comparable preparation and posture.
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. We proceeded with the posture of seeing it could have instances of violence. We knew it was going to be focused on the Capitol. We knew that there was going to be members of Proud Boy, Antifa, participating. And like I'd said before, not Capitol Police, not Metropolitan Police, not any of our federal agencies had any information we're going to be facing an armed insurrection of thousands of people.
Now, if we take...
Stop, please. Okay. So the headline. Around 7 p.m. on January 5, less than 24 hours before an attack, an FBI bulletin warning that extremists were calling for violent attacks on Congress landed in the inbox. And it warned of a war against Congress. Honestly, what do they expect us to believe? It doesn't excuse the insurrectionists. It absolutely doesn't. They're going to jail, and they should go for jail a long time. And felony murder is not out of the question yet for some of these people. There was no apparent fire hydrant to the head, but there's a dead police officer. No minimizing this. And they botched it up. It's like 9/11. Everyone's pointing at each other. And they didn't get very far yesterday because senators like to hear themselves talking. Other news. U.S. home price growth accelerated in December. I'll tell you about Andrew and Todd later, but just remember that. Home price growth accelerated in December as the number of homes in the market continued to decline. People are fleeing the cities. They are getting out of the cities. But don't worry about interest rates. Jerome Powell says easy money policies are staying in place for a long time. Meanwhile, Home Depot, Macy's, they expect pandemic trends to continue for now. Consumer spending in the second half of the year might shift back to in-store buying. I don't think that's ever changing. Mitt Romney has a great op-ed in the Wall Street Journal today on why the Biden stimulus bill is a $1.9 trillion clunker. The former Republican nominee for president is absolutely right. It's a terrible bill. It should be rejected. Joe Manchin come through. Tech stocks have bounced back as rate fears ease, but commodity prices are surging ahead. Copper has sent it above $9,000 a ton. And Brent crude went briefly above $66 a barrel. That's almost 100% higher than at the depth of the crisis in March when we were beginning to see the year ahead last March. And corn is at $5.54 a bushel. Dwayne waits every morning for the corn report. I don't like to see anyone lose money, but Elon Musk lost $15 billion one day after his Bitcoin tweet. Now, I don't think that really upsets Elon Musk, who's got more money than he can count. But nevertheless, it's interesting. If you've set your portfolio up to lose $15 billion in a day, you're not really diversified. Iran is playing chicken with Biden on as it moves closer to the bomb, according to the Times of Israel. We are not doing a stellar job of negotiating. Good news, 44,000 Americans have received at least one dose of the vaccine. 65 million have received two doses. 65 million total doses have been administered. So 44 million Americans have 44 million and a half Americans have received one or more doses. That does not include yours truly. And I've spent 48 hours now trying to find out how to make it work. I'm not bad on tech. I mean, I put this studio together. I put together three studios now. And every day I have to come in here and repair the damage that's been done. But I can't find a vaccine. Let me bring you up to speed on the markets brought to you by Birch Gold. Everyone should know that that's where you buy your gold. Elon Musk might want to go to Birch Gold. Elon, just send my name, Hugh, to 474747. And you go to Hugh Gold as well. No matter how little or how much you want to buy, there is, I think, a $5,000 minimum. They will sell you gold, or they will establish a rollover of your IRA or 401k into their actual physical depository that they will maintain. Go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. Dow was up 15 yesterday. NASDAQ was down 67 and S&P up 4. Germany's having a good day. England's off a little bit. The 10-year Treasury drops a little bit to 1.36. And gold, it is $1,805. Go to HughGold.com. HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. Come right back. It is Wednesday on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384. The fact is, the internet never forgets. There has never been a more important time to protect your internet activity, your digital data. That's why I urge you to get ExpressVPN. Everything you search for, watch, or click online can be tracked back to you by big tech companies, and they do it. They match your activity to your true identity using your device's unique IP address. That's why you need to switch, and I switched, to ExpressVPN. On your computer, on your phone, every IP address is masked by a secure VPN server, which makes it harder for websites to identify me. Plus, you can use ExpressVPN on up to 5 devices simultaneously. That's why they're rated the number one VPN by CNET and Wired. So stop handing over your data to big tech companies. Go with the VPN I trust for online protection. Visit expressvpn.com/Hewitt to get 3 months free on a 1-year package. That's expressvpn.com/Hewitt to get 3 extra months for free. Go to expressvpn.com/Hewitt right now to learn more.
The trouble in my drag.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. The most important thing that will happen today will be a ruling made by the obscure office of the Senate parliamentarian. Today, the Senate parliamentarian is expected to rule on whether or not a $15 an hour federal minimum wage is germane to the reconciliation bill. Now, I've said this to you before. It can be tall grass time, but I want you to understand this. When the Senate and the House consider the overarching budget resolution, and they put it together in the House Budget Committee and the Senate Budget Committee, and they send it to each other, and they go back and forth, and they agree on the budget resolution, how much they want to spend for this fiscal year in which we are in, that resolution is not subject to the filibuster. So they only need 50 votes, plus Senator, former Senator, now Vice President Kamala Harris, to pass it. So whatever they put into that will pass. However, whatever they put into that must pass inspection by the Senate parliamentarian, because when reconciliation was adopted years ago, Harry Byrd of West Virginia imposed upon the process the so-called Byrd Rule, Robert Byrd. Harry Byrd was from Virginia, Robert Byrd. So a Byrd Rule is B-Y-R-D. And the Byrd Rule says that any part of the budget reconciliation package must be germane to taxes and spending. The question is, does a $15 minimum wage make it past the Byrd hurdle, the Byrd Rule? Almost everybody who studied it says no, that is a standalone piece of legislation. But Democrats are urging upon the parliamentarian an exotic interpretation of the Byrd Rule that says, hey, more people will make more money and therefore there will be more tax revenue. Well, under that theory of proximate cause, everything is responsible. It's the butterfly wings theory of the Byrd Rule. And if adopted, the Byrd Rule will stop nothing from going into reconciliation. Now, the Byrd Rule has actually been applied with a fair amount of consistency over the year. The Republicans did not repeal Obamacare via reconciliation because the only part of Obamacare that dealt with taxes and spending was the tax on individuals who did not participate in the Obamacare market and went without insurance. And Senator Tom Cotton proposed under reconciliation that that be repealed, and it was, because it was a tax measure, and so it was repealed. Next year, they're going to raise taxes on us, and the corporate rate's going to go from 21 to 28%. The individual rates will go up as high as they can dare put it up because of the recession that we're in and struggling to get out of. But even the Democrats are leery about raising taxes right away because the economy is so fragile. And they're arguing on one hand, we need to spend $1.9 trillion to keep the economy from tanking. The one thing you don't do in a recession is raise taxes. So they're not putting taxes into this reconciliation. They're just hosing down the country with money, and especially big blue states that are in trouble because they have these ridiculous pension deals with their public employees and ridiculous spending programs and ridiculous numbers of government employees. It's why it costs so much. They're not spending, you know, we're spending $1.9 trillion. I tried to do the math last night. I'll let Dwayne. Dwayne came in today to face the music next hour about the car key incident for which he's responsible. But I would like you to know that during the break, he's going to do the math. We're going to spend $1.9 trillion. So the math, Generalissimo, question is this. There are, according to some studies, 535,000 unhoused people in the United States, as the left says. Most people refer to them as homeless. Okay, 535,000 homeless people on the streets, most of them on the West Coast. How much would $1.9 billion go to each of them? Or actually, let's just say, let's cut it off at one quarter of the package, $450 billion. If we only gave one quarter of that package to homeless relief, how much could we get to each of the 535,000 people? That's your math question for the break, Dwayne. Please go to work on it. I want to remind everyone to please head over to my Ask Me Anything. All right, you can do that at askahost.com. You can ask me anything. Two Saturdays hint, if you go to askahost.com. All of us, we can't move around the country, so we need you to go to askahost.com. If you want to be in that small group of people with whom I have a conversation a week from Saturday, go to askahost.com. Click on the Hue button and sign up today. Askahost.com. Is this the way our story ends? Hey, man, sing me a song. When we were everyone, we were more than just a slice of American. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. The reconciliation bill, which is $1.9 trillion, and it will be upped or down today as a result of the rulings of the Senate parliamentarian, it's still more money than you can imagine. We've never spent $2 trillion on it. Even when we went to war, we didn't spend $2 trillion. And it's because, as Mitch McConnell said, the Democrats won the Georgia Senate races, so the Republicans can't stop it if they keep the 50 Democrats together plus the vice president. They'll pass reconciliation. So I had Duane do the math question during the break. And it's this simple. If 25% of the proposed reconciliation amount, just one quarter of it, are spent on the nation's approximately 567,000 homeless people. And that's according to the State of Homelessness 2020 edition put out by the Alliance, National Alliance to End Homelessness, the big national group. They estimate 567,000, they actually get it down. I don't know how they get to 567,715. They use the HUD's annual point in time, but it's gone up in the last year. But let's use 567 since that number. If you take 25%, just 25%, one quarter of the amount of money we're about to blow, because there is no plan to spend it, and just block grant it to the states and say, house your unhoused people. That's $836,687 per person. You think we can get them a house? You think we can do that? With a government program, mind you. So it's a government program, so it's going to cost 400% more than the private sector would do. But even in California, you can swing $867,000 a house, $836,000 a house. So actually, back it up. Let's just say 10% of reconciliation is earmarked as block grants to house the unhoused. No services, just get them housing first. That is the demand of homeless activist groups and unhoused activist groups everywhere. Get them off the street, get them into a shelter. And by the way, they can have group homes, you can buy hotels, you can buy office buildings, you can rehab old hospitals. There are lots of places to put them. Even if it's only 10% of $1.9 trillion. You spent on the 567, that's $334,000 per unhoused person. And you might say, that's really a lot of money. And I would say, have you been to Skid Row? Have you looked under the freeway passes of Oregon? Have you been to Corvallis? Have you wandered around Portland or Seattle where I'm on the air? And in fact, New York is actually fairly effective if you're listening to me in the middle of the night in New York. Florida does a pretty good job. It's warm down there, but they have homeless everywhere. Homelessness is a product of three things: economic catastrophe, mental illness, and drug addiction. So it's not just housing people. Some people won't stay in a shelter. But if we're going to spend $1.9 trillion, can we solve at least one thing? Can we not just have it go away? A lot of it's going to schools, and they're not even going to spend it this year because they're not going to open. It really is a stupid bill. There is no demonstrated need. They're not doing PPP again, which worked, which went to restaurants and small businesses and one person and five person shops. They're going to open up a new lending facility for 20 employees. So I'm not saying don't spend a lot of money. Target it. And since everyone agrees, at least I think everyone agrees, and open up the phones, people might disagree. 1-800-520-1234. Block granted and just say to the state housing authority, here's your $334,000 per homeless person. You'd better get them off the street. Now, there's already a lot of money in places like L.A. They've passed a bond measure. They've passed a special city tax. There's money everywhere, and they still can't get people off the street because it's the government. And the government has a joint operating authority with no authority. And they've got a mayor who's a cipher, Eric Garcetti. And they've got a city council in L.A. that's basically feudalism in the form of a democracy. It's 14 different kings and queens over. It reminds me of Cider House Rules. Good night, princes of Maine. Good night, kings of New England. In Los Angeles, it's good night, czars of the districts of the city council. And they are czars. But even they can't screw up $334,000 per person. So if we're going to spend this much money, have any of you ever done this? I mean, if you get a check from mom or dad or somebody dies and you get a little inheritance, do you just, you know, go out and give it to people? Do you spray it around? Do you let it fly? Or do you actually go out and say, well, let's at least fix this freeway overpass? That's all. By the way, they did that with shovel-ready jobs under Obama. Nothing happened. I used to ask everyone, where did the Obama money go? And I remember Jonathan Adler on this show, Jonathan Alter. Adler is the smart one. Alter is the historian. Adler is the law professor. Jonathan Alter saying, well, I think we repaved a road in New Jersey. They really, they can't, they don't remember, they can't, there are no signs saying Obama built this, like the Works Progress Administration, the WPA. I lifeguarded in a WPA pool, Waddell Pool in Niles, was my first summer job other than caddying and landscaping. And landscaping is a fancy name for cutting the grass, all right? But I dug ditches and I painted carports and that kind of stuff you do when you're 14, 15, and 16. But when you get a real job at 17 in those days, I worked at the Waddell Pool in Niles, Ohio. And it had WPA proudly there. You can't find any Obama Works Progress Administration building. They didn't build anything with that money. It just vanished. And $1.9 trillion is going to vanish. You're never going to see it. It's going to go into the bank deposits. It's going to go into the pension funds for public employees long retired. You're never going to see it because they're not going to. They're doing Democratic stuff with the money. But at least 10% for the homeless. What do you say? 10% for the homeless. There is a 100-day injunction on Joe Biden's 100-day deportation pause. So Judge Noman Merchant in Houston indefinitely enjoined Joe Biden's effort to suspend the most deportations. He said, you can't do that. That's not applying the law. So he has suspended the suspension. That doesn't make a lot of sense. It's pretty difficult to follow. But there are a lot of smart federal judges on the benches because of Donald Trump today who were not there 4 years ago. And Joe Biden's not going to be able to run around and do a bunch of stuff that he didn't do before. I'm just warning you that they're not going to have the same free ride that they had before. I also want you to know that it does not appear that Neera Tanden is going to be confirmed unless Lisa Murkowski votes for her or an unexpected vote arrives for her. And Javier Becerra does appear set to be confirmed. So we've managed to shoot at the wrong target, if you ask me. You usually get one, and the Republicans pick the wrong one. They pick the mean tweets one, which will, of course, effectively bar thousands of people on social media from ever being advised and consent. Now, I am, you might not know this, Dwayne calls me the Honorable Hugh Hewitt for a reason. When you've been confirmed by the United States Senate, as I was in 1988, unanimously, I might add, with the votes of Robert Byrd and Ted Kennedy, to become the Deputy Director of the United States Office of Personnel Management, they were really running out of people then. You have to go through all this ridiculous paperwork, and they waived the hearing. There were like 100 of us that got confirmed unanimously after they did a deal for money or something, some Robert Byrd deal. He would trade nominations for money in the old day, you know, give West Virginia a new building or something, and he would approve 100 of us. But when you go through that, you get the honorable title forever. And I never intend to go through confirmation again because by the time they got done listening to all of my radio transcripts for 30 years, they would bar me because of Dwayne. I have no ambitions to ever be advised and consented again. If I ever go back in the government, I have two objectives. Deputy counsel to the president, because that was what Dick Houser did, and Dick has got a 4 handicap. So as far as I can tell, if you're deputy counsel to the president, you get a 4 handicap. I'm just saying, Dick, pick up the pace. I know you're listening. And deputy counsel to deputy counsel in the Bermuda. No, wait, Consul General in Bermuda. That's my job. Consul General in Bermuda. I'm telling all the, you know, I'm going to go to Switzerland on the Republican nomination. President Trump wants to come back if he's running in 2024. He's welcome here. Mike Pompeo, Ron DeSantis, Tom Cotton, Kristi Noem. In fact, Kristi Noem got a good one in last night. Let me play this for you. Kristi Noem on Fox with Dana Perino last night. Cut number 4.
It's a very, very unfair bill. It bails out those states that shut down their economies. It rewards them for making people stay in their homes and for taking away a business's right to be open and take care of their customers and their employees. So it's incredibly detrimental to our state because we made the right decisions. We trusted people. We have the lowest unemployment rate in the nation and are tied for it with Nebraska. And we're getting through this together. What this bill does is reward New York and Illinois and California for their bad actions and their overstep of our personal liberties and our freedoms.
Governor Noem's a keeper. All right, so she's going to be on the triple-tiered stage. It's going to be like the judges at a UFC fight. They're going to have like five rows of them and ringside at a championship match because a number of people are going to be running. And I'm just going to have one condition for all of them. Will you name me Consul General of Bermuda? And I'll be nice to the rest of you, all of you. I'm just looking for that one little commitment. Seriously, when we have these debates, it's going to be wild. And they're all welcome here. They will all show up here, even those who say they're not running, but they're running. Like Ted Cruz was on yesterday. I didn't ask him if he's running. We were talking about the bill and nominations. They're all welcome here. This is Switzerland. I will be nice to all Republicans. But so you know, I intend to be the Consul General in Bermuda. That's my ambition in life. I wanted at one time to be the Lieutenant Governor of California, which is another government job that requires you absolutely do nothing. I mean, God forbid the California governor die. You're in a world of hurt then. You actually have to do something. But those are I don't want to be confirmed by the Senate again. So I can just say this with all honesty. The Tandon rule is going to take the legs off of the nominees who come up there and want to stand up and say, yes, I can. They're going to run through the confirmation process, detweetification. Like debathification of nominees. They're going to be detweetification going forward. And I don't know about you, but kids in their cups in college tweet stupid stuff, and you can't erase it. They can always go and find it. So let this be a warning to all of you. Stop Twitter. If you ever want to serve at the highest levels of government, just don't do that. You might get some gratification. Just get off social media, in fact. Live like would-be federal judges who found out, they woke up in ninth grade and they decided they wanted to wear a robe. So they've never put anything online ever. And they write about the commercial code. That's what they do. That's where we're headed. Absolutely dullest republic in the history of republics. Welcome back, America. United States Senator Mitch McConnell, leader of the Republicans in the United States Senate, took to the floor yesterday to discuss the new reconciliation bill. 1-800-520-1234, connection to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Let's play cut number eight. Here is Leader McConnell.
Mounting evidence suggests our economy is chomping at the bit to rebuild the prosperity we lost last year. We reached this threshold because in part of the historic bipartisan work Congress built just last year. From the job-saving Paycheck Protection Program to the Operation Warp Speed and its historically successful sprint toward vaccines to cushioning the blow for unemployed Americans and so much more. We spent roughly $4 trillion last year, the largest peacetime fiscal expansion in American history by far. And the five bills that passed the Senate passed 96-1, 90-8, 96-0 by voice vote, and 92-6. That got us to the crossroads. With a truly terrible 12 months behind us, but in a better position to move forward than many experts had predicted, now the policies that Washington puts forward will help determine what kind of year 2021 will be for American families. So, are we destined to spend a second year in a national defensive crouch? Are we going to surrender another school year to the pandemic? Another year of elevated unemployment? Another year of diminished social and community life? Or are we going to plant a flag and say this is the year that America comes roaring back? Are we going to make this the year we reclaim our lives and retake our country in a way that is safe, smart, but determined? Washington gets a major say in this, but unfortunately there seems to be some impulse on the Democratic side to act as though we're still stuck back in April of 2020, and we're going to be stuck there for all of 2021. The partisan legislation Democrats are preparing to ram through looks like something you'd pass to blunt another year of shutdowns. not to help guide a smart and proactive recovery. It looks more like another big bandage for a mostly shut down country rather than a launching pad to help us get back on offense. Look at schools. All the facts and hard evidence show that with simple safety precautions, K through 12 schools can and should be reopening safely right now. Yet the Biden administration is going out of its way to avoid getting kids back in school. They have their own experts contradicting their own recent statements and their own CDC backpedaling from the hard science, all to accommodate big labor's goalpost moving. Just look at the proposed money in their new partisan bill for K through 12 schools. They call it an emergency relief fund, but just 5% of the money they want would be spent in fiscal year 2021. 95% of this so-called emergency relief for schools would go out in fiscal 2022 and beyond. Or take the economy. Experts across the spectrum say that incomes, savings, job opportunities, and industry outlooks are already rebounding. Further aid needs to be smartly targeted so government doesn't get in the way. But Democrats want to double down on Band-Aid policies like they're planning for another year of stagnation instead of trying to set up success. Almost every part of their draft reads like Democrats took the things they ideologically wanted to spend money on and worked backwards instead of starting with the actual state of the country, the actual needs of American families, and working toward that. Not terribly surprising. Remember, one senior House Democrat told everybody last spring the pandemic would be, quote, a tremendous opportunity to restructure things to fit our vision.
Mitch is so good. Mitch is the leader of the Republican Party, and people know that. Kevin McCarthy is the leader of the House. He's the leader of the Senate, and Mitch has the most power because the Senate is more closely divided than the House, but together they lead the Republican Party, and he knows this is a terrible bill. And so they are, we will find out today from the parliamentarian. I will tell you tomorrow, I will open it. But let me tell you about Ask Me Anything. Go to askahost.com. You're going to see my smiling face, 20 questions with Hugh Hewitt. Get your tickets now. We are limiting the number of people that can be in this. We can't go out to our affiliates. We love to go out to our affiliates. Every Salem host is participating on a different day. I am doing it on Saturday night, March the 6th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Saturday, a week from Saturday, March the 6th, 8 p.m. Eastern. Join me for this online event. And I'll be sitting right here in my studio, and you can ask me anything. Now, I'm not going to answer anything. I'm not going to tell you about Dwayne and those shorts, my gosh, those nuclear shorts. But I will tell you pretty much anything else. And all you have to do is go to ask me, askahost.com. Look, Steelers fans, can you remember askahost.com? And you can sign up there for any of the Salem hosts. We all have different nights. All are doing different things, like March 18th with Seb Gorka and May 27th with Mike Gallagher. Even Prager is going to be available on April 27th. I don't think anyone will go to that one. But if you want to come to mine, it's the first. Of course, I am always the pioneer. March 6th, 8 to 9:30 Eastern Time on Saturday. Go sign up.